with this first lecture, Introduction to Pali. And now we will study about the oral transmission. As you remember, before the Buddha passed away, he said that the Dhamma and the Vinaya was going to be the teacher after his demise. And following that words from the Buddha, the Sangha met for the first time 3 months after his death in the city of Rajagaha, nowadays Rashir in India. Actually, it's a place that you can even visit, those caves that are supposed to be the place where this first Buddhist council was took place. So 3 months after the death of the Buddha, so the 500 monks met in that place and had what is called the first Buddhist council. And that was the recording of the Dhamma and the Vinaya. There were 500 monks. According to our sources, there were 500 monks, and the leader of the Sangha was the Venerable Mahakassapa. And Ananda was the responsible for the Dhamma, and Upali was the responsible for the Vinaya. So, as the Buddha said, the Dhamma and the Vinaya, so they appointed Upali, who was the foremost in Vinaya, and Ananda, who had remembered all the teachings of the Buddha. So just those 2 months, and among, there were 2 months, Mahakassapa, and there were altogether 500 arahants. They recorded for the first time the Dhamma and the Vinaya. So that was the function, one of the functions of this first Buddhist council was to record what the Buddha really taught. Actually, the Pali word for council is Sangiti or Sangajana. We have 2 words in Pali. Sangiti or Sangajana, and they are derived from a root that means singing or chanting. And the prefix sang means together. So therefore Sangiti or Sangajana means chanting together. So that means that the Dhamma and the Vinaya was recorded orally. And how it was recorded? Chanting together all the 500 monks. So the procedure was something like this. The Venerable Mahakassapa asked Ananda, for example, when the Buddha was living in this place, what happened? And then Ananda relates that when the Buddha was living in this place, I mean, he taught this sutta, for example. And Ananda would recite the sutta that the Buddha taught in that place. And then all the monks together recited together that sutta in the sign of approval. And that is the what we call the recording. Now we record with this MP3. No. But at that time, I mean, the recording and archiving was done in that way. So all the monks together recite. And when they recite, they close that teaching. They said, oh, that teaching is authentic. Therefore, I mean, we close this. Nobody is going to touch it again. So that is what happened at the First Buddhist Council. So please remember, at the First Buddhist Council, one of the functions was to record. Because the Buddha said, the Dhamma and the Vinaya will be your teacher after my demise. So they need to record what is Dhamma and the Vinaya for the future generations. This is the first important thing. And the second important thing of the First Buddhist Council was to classify the teachings of the Buddha. So you have these two main functions of that council. First one is the recording, and the second one is the classification. And according to our ancient sources, you will find that the Buddha word was classified according to different criteria. The most famous of them is the Tipitaka, three baskets. The three baskets is only one of the different criteria in which the word of the Buddha was classified at the First Buddhist Council. So, there is a book that is called The Inception of Discipline. It's published by the Pali Text Society. This book contains the translation of the introduction of the commentary of the Vinaya. And this book is a small book. And the first part is the English translation, and the second part is the Pali text. And that is our source, our most ancient source for the three first Buddhist councils. So that is a very important book because it's like a history, official history, we can say, in the Theravada tradition of the first, second, and third Buddhist council. And that book, although it is short, that is what is called Inception of Discipline, that is a translation of the introduction of the commentary, the introduction of the Vinaya commentary, has very useful information. And you may find different books that write about the councils and what happened with the Sangha, but always try to find out what are the sources. Not when people write about that. Because there are actually not many sources where we can derive the information. So, and there is a lot of speculation. And so we need to be based on the sources. So that's why, I mean, when you see a book or you buy a book about the early history of Buddhism or what happened with the council and everything, please check what are the sources. Because actually there are not many sources. Most of the sources are come from our tradition. So these sources that I mentioned to you, that I recommend that book, and also you can read the Chulawaga, that is one of the books of the Vinaya Pitaka, that has information of the first two councils. So that are the most ancient sources. So according to that book that I mentioned, in the First Buddhist Council, first they recorded the Dhamma and the Vinaya, and then they classify. And they classify in baskets, the baskets of discipline, the Vinaya Pitaka, the baskets of the discourse, the Sutta Pitaka, and the basket of the Abhidhamma Pitaka. And another classification that is known by the people is what we call the Nikayas, the classification in collections. And according to that criteria, we have five Nikayas, five collections. You all know of them. Digha Nikaya, that is long discourses, and then you have the Majjhima Nikaya, the middle length discourses, and then you have the Samyutta Nikaya, I don't know how Oh, that's not right. Collected discourses? Collected discourses, and then we have the Anguttara Nikaya, numerical discourses, and then we have the Kudaka Nikaya, that is like something like a minor collection, but it is misleading, that name. Because according to the that classification, all the Vinaya and all the Abhidhamma is included in the Kudaka Nikaya. So Venerable Sivananda, he mentions that, if you have studied with him, that many people, or some people made the mistake to think that the Nikaya is a sub-classification of the Pitakas. But in fact, there are different ways of classifying the Buddha's teaching. That's why when we talk about the five collections in the Kudaka Nikaya, we include the Abhidhamma, the whole Abhidhamma, and the whole Vinaya Abhidhamma. And also in the Kudaka Nikaya, you have many important books. You have the Dhammapada, you have the Sutta Nipata, you have the Udana, Ipigutaka, and other books that are very important in our tradition. So, and so in the Theras, in that first council, they recorded and classified. And then there were other councils in which that Dhamma and Vinaya that was recorded for the first time was reaffirmed. So according to Theravada tradition, all these councils have the function, starting from the second onwards, to reaffirm what was recorded previously. So that is nothing else. But we will see now that in some of these councils, other books have been included according to our knowledge. So, but in this life that we have what is called oral transmission, because in the history of the Theravada, we have two phases. The first one is what we call the oral transmission that lasted for about 5 centuries, and then we have the written transmission, we can say, that lasted until nowadays. And we can say that at the end of the 20th century, the beginning of the 21st century, we have a third phase that is the electronic transmission, because we have the books in an electronic format now that is distributed in CDs or internet. So the oral transmission lasted for about 500 years. So it is said that at the time of the Buddha, the people knew about writing. In Vinaya, there is information that writing was in existence, but writing was used not for recording the teachings. Maybe it was used for royal proclamations or other purposes. So the Buddha spoke and they recorded by memory. And by memory, it was kept for 500 years, the generation and generation. And we have the three first Buddhist councils, first, second, and third, that the Dhamma and the Vinaya was kept orally. We have the second council that happened 100 years after the death of the Buddha. So, and it is said that there were some discrepancies regarding the Vinaya. So, according to our tradition, there were some monks who wanted to relax the rules of discipline. And that second council was convened, and then they reaffirmed what was recorded in the first, but there was a large group of monks who were the majority who formed another group that was called the Mahasanghika. And that other group that was a majority, it says that are the forerunners of the Mahayana. But it is important to note that at the Second Buddhist Council, there were not discrepancies regarding the Dhamma. The discrepancy was about the Vinaya. But we come 234 years after the death of the Buddha, during the time of the King Ashoka, and then we have this Third Buddhist Council, that this was very important in the history of Buddhism for many reasons. In this Third Buddhist Council, we have that the Dhamma and the Vinaya was sent to different parts of the world. So, according to the to that book that I mentioned before, Ashoka sent monks to Sri Lanka, to Southeast Asia, and also Ashoka sent monks to the West. In that book you will find that Ashoka sent monks even to Greece and to what is the West nowadays. And according to the people from Myanmar, they received the Buddhism from Ashoka. Although we don't have maybe historical records that can corroborate this information apart from the Theravada tradition commentaries. And during the time of Ashoka, Sri Lanka received the Tipitaka and the commentaries with the arrival of Mahinda, the son of King Ashoka. Sri Lanka king was the Vanampiya Tisa. That is the 307, 267 before common era. So, now, according to the Theravada tradition, at the first Buddhist Council, not only the Tipitaka was recorded, but also what is called the Mahatakata, that is the great commentary. So it is believed that during the time of the Buddha, the monks learned the interpretations of the teachings, the monks learned the explanation of what the Buddha was teaching. And so at that first Buddhist Council, it is believed, according to our tradition, that also that great commentary was recorded. Now, that great commentary remained open. The Tipitaka that was recorded was closed, according to our tradition. That means we cannot change what is in the Digha Nikaya, we cannot change what is in the Majjhima Nikaya. But that great commentary, Mahatakata, remained open, and that means that things were added afterwards. And that great commentary is very important in the Theravada tradition, because that great commentary was brought to Sri Lanka by the son of King Ashoka, together with the Tipitaka. So, and it says that Sri Lanka began Theravada Buddhist, received Theravada Buddhism with this. And Sri Lanka has played a very important role in the history of Theravada Buddhism, as we will see. Now, in the Third Buddhist Council, it says that there were many differences according to the Dhamma. It is said that there were about 18 schools that have different ideas regarding some points of the Dhamma. Some of these things that you will find nowadays in the Mahayana, in Tibetan Buddhism, for example, they believe in the bardo. And you have heard about that. In Pali, that is called Antarabhava. This intermediate existence. So there were different kind of difference of opinion regarding the Dhamma. So in that third Buddhist council, it is said that one book was added to the Tipitaka. And that book, the name of that book is called the Katawatu. And that book belongs to the Abhidhamma Pitaka. It is a text, because it is a book that compiles the discrepancies regarding the Dhamma and explains these discrepancies according to the Orthodox point of view, that is a Theravada. So that book is a compilation of all these different kind of ideas that have evolved during these more than 200 years after the death of the Buddha. And you will find in that book all these things and the Theravada explanation or the Orthodox explanation. And all these things belong to this book that is called the Katawatu. You can find it in this translation by the Pali Text Society with the name of the Points of Controversy. And that book was put in the Abhidhamma Pitaka. No, that is interesting, no? Why it was not put in the Sutta Pitaka? Because it's just the heterodox point of view and the explanation according to the Theravada. So that's a good question. I don't know the answer. So that book was added. So in the sample discussion. Now, so the son of the king Asoka wrote the Tipitaka and the commentaries to Sriranga, and Theravada Buddhism started moving southward. So southern India, and then Sri Lanka. And we have a very important event that is circa 80 before Common Era in a place called Aloka Vihara in Sri Lanka, when the Tipitaka and the commentary that Asoka-san brought were written for the first time in Pandis. Now, why? Why the scriptures were written in Pandis? Why they were not kept orally? According to our tradition, there was a rebellion in Sri Lanka, and many monks have to go to southern India for a period of about 12 years. And when things got better in Sri Lanka, it is said that those monks who have to leave went back to Sri Lanka and compared the oral tradition that they have kept with the oral tradition that remained in Sri Lanka. And fortunately, nothing was lost. It is difficult for us to understand this because we rely so much on books and other things. But when you rely on oral tradition, no? So you have a book, something like that. And you need to recite the book to another person. But the monks decided that the future generations were not going to be able to keep the teachings orally, so they decided to write the teaching for the first time. And that event took place 80 years before the Common Era. in this place that's called Aloka Vihara, and not only the Tipitaka, but also the great commentaries, both were written in Pandit. And that begins what is called the fitter transmission of the teachings. And this event is considered the fourth Buddhist Council. But you have to understand that this event was not the fourth Buddhist Council. Unlike the other Buddhist councils that were convened for a special purpose, as I said before, recording and reaffirming, this event came to be considered the fourth Buddhist Council afterwards in the Theravada tradition, because of the importance of the event of writing for the first time in the Theravada tradition. In the sub-commentaries, you will find, if you want, I can give you the reference later, one of the sub-commentaries came to be considered as the fourth Buddhist Council. But this was not a council like the three councils that happened before. So the writing took place in palm leaves. I don't know if you have ever seen these palm leaves. Have you seen these palm leaves? The manuscripts. So there are special palm leaves, and you need a stylus, a scroll, that is like a metal with a sharp point, and then you write. Actually, you make like a groove in the palm leaf, and then you put ink on top, and then you can read. So it was a very elaborate process. And those manuscripts were used, I mean, until recently, in Theravada countries. You can find in Myanmar many manuscripts, libraries of manuscripts with the teachings. So this was the fourth Buddhist Council that has the writings in Pali. And then, in the history of Theravada, came many, many centuries until the 19th century, when in Myanmar, in Mandalay, we have the fifth Buddhist Council, when the Buddha's teachings were recorded in marble slabs. So there are 729, I say, marble slabs that you can visit near Mandalay, in a place that is called Kutodo Pagoda. And each marble slab is housed in a brick stupa. And so that king, that was the name Mindon, recorded the whole Tipitaka in those 729 marble slabs. So this is a very nice place to visit. If you go to Myanmar, you should go to visit that place, because it's a huge compound. Imagine 729 marble slabs. And it is not easy to find the books. I mean, you have the books here in the bookshelves, and you can find the Digha Nikaya Volume 1 and open it and find what you want. But if you go to that place and you want to read the book number 1 of the Digha Nikaya, you have to go first to the center of the stupa, where you have a list of books and the number of the stupa. And then you have a map that guides you, I mean, through this labyrinth, is a maze of corridors, and then you can reach to, I don't know, stupa number 222, that has the book number 1 of the Digha Nikaya, and you can find that. So that it is amazing, this place. And you have in that place all the Tipitaka in Pali, in Myanmar script. And the amazing thing is that you don't have, for example, you finish a sentence here and then you have a space and you finish your paragraph and you have a space. But in those numbers lab, everything is all together. So there are no space, there are no lines, no paragraph. So because I think, you know, space-wise, I think. but anyway, those marvelous labs were the base for the sixth Buddhist Council that took place in 1954-1956. Venerable Sinaranda used to tell us when he was a novice, when he was a young man, there were the proceedings before the sixth Buddhist Council, and they need to check the text, and they used to check the text that they have in the marvelous labs. And since I'm in the night, he was a small man, he can crawl inside those brick stupas and go and find the lines and check the books, I mean, that they were edited for the sixth Buddhist Council. He used to tell us that story. And I have a personal story to tell you about that happened with just a few months before he passed away. At the end of 2004, Venerable Sinaranda was invited to teach Abhidharma in Singapore. And there was a Buddhist summit in Yangon also that he was invited. And when he was preparing the Abhidharma class in Phnom Penh, he found out that there was a mistake in one of the books of the Abhidharma, the first book, the Dhamma Sangami, of the Sixth Buddhist Council. So he was preparing this class of the Abhidharma that he was going to teach in Singapore at the end of December. So he used the books of the library, and when he was preparing the classes in the Dhamma Sangami, his first book, in the at the beginning of the Sangami, we have what is called the Matika. So in one of these, he found a mistake. And then he double-checked that mistake with the book of the Pali Text Society, and he found out that in the edition of the Pali Text Society, there was not a mistake. So we decided that. So he was invited to visit this, to attend this Buddhist summit in December 2004, at the beginning of December 2004. And then he was had to visit his brother in Mandalay because his brother had a stroke. So after, I mean, we finished this proceedings of the summit, we went to Mandalay to visit his brother, but he wanted to check if the mistake was the mistake only from the Sixth Buddhist Council or the mistake came also from the Marvelous Labs. So we stayed 2 days in Mandalay, and one day I went in the morning at his monastery. He told me, "Do you want to go to the Marvelous Labs? We can go and check." And that was a really unforgettable adventure for me. Because one of his cousins came to the monastery early in the morning, and we went there, and so of course, and Lucy and Amanda there, I mean, they opened everything for him, and then, I mean, we talked to the caretaker of this place, and then we find the marvelous lab that we need to check, and then, I mean, we found the marvelous lab. And then we found there was a mistake in the marvelous lab of the fifth Buddhist Council. So that's amazing. And then there was another talk. I have the pictures. We took many pictures that occasion because finding the marvelous lab was an adventure itself, because not only we need to find out the book, but we need to find out the passage. And as I told you, I mean, everything is written without space. So, but finally we got it. So, and then we recorded, we take pictures and everything. So it was a mistake there too. So, and in the Sri Lanka edition, that, or the Palliative Society edition, it's right. So, and the amazing thing is that Venerable Sinanda told me is that the king, Mindon, I don't know how to say it, there was a declaration at the beginning of this writing in the Mother's Lap. He said, the person who makes a mistake, we will cut the hand of the scribe, or the person who makes a mistake. But according to Venerable Sinanda, that king was a very, very good king, so no hands were cut. But I mean, but we found a mistake, so that was a very nice story that I wanted to share with you. So that was the fifth Buddhist council, and then we have the sixth Buddhist council that happened in 1954-1956. And that was the last Buddhist council that was the most important, because we have the, according to Theravada, especially the Burmese people, the best edition of the Tipitaka, the commentaries of the Sakoma. And the sixth Buddhist Council happened to commemorate the 2,500 years of the death of the Buddha. So now what I wanted to tell you, okay, let's move. When we said that the Dhamma and the Vinaya, no? So we refer to the canonical literature. So that is the origin. And we can classify the Pali literature in two parts, canonical and non-canonical. And non-canonical, we can have these three divisions according to the age of the literature. Commentaries that are the oldest, Attakata, that's Pali. Attakata means explanation of the meaning. Sub-commentaries, Tika, means expanding, the Pali word Tika means expanding. So that means further explanation, and other works. So don't be fooled by other works. Other works comprise many, many things in the Pali literature. So actually, there are many, many things in other works. So it is a vast, there are many, many volumes in canonical and non-canonical the Pali literature. So if you study Pali, you will be able to have access to all this Pali literature, both canonical and non-canonical. So let's see about the canonical literature. So if we study Pali, we will study the canonical literature. Actually, this Pali course that I have prepared is based on the material that we find in the canonical literature and also in the commentaries. So the canonical literature contains 40 volumes in the sixth Buddhist Council edition. If you go to the Monastery Harmon Bay, or if you go to TMC in Tathagata, you can find this volumes in the sixth Buddhist Council edition. What you find in these 40 volumes? Mostly you have what the Buddha taught. This is more than 80%. And then in the canonical literature you have some works, the treatises, that were attributed to some contemporary disciples of the Buddha, such as Sariputta and Kacchapa. So if you look in the four volumes, you will find Patisambhita Magga, that is called The Path of Discrimination, I think it's a translation in English. That book has been translated by Jnana Mori into English. The Patisambhita Magga, that book is attributed to not to the Buddha but to Sariputta. But that book, I mean, because Sariputta lived at the same time of the Buddha, that book was recorded at the First Buddhist Council. And then you have other books like the Mahanilesa and the Chulanilesa that are like explanations of the Sutta Nipata. That books also are attributed to Sariputta. And there are other books that are attributed to another disciple that is called Kacchapa. So among the books in the Kudaka Nikaya, you will find that there are these, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4, about 5, 6 volumes that were not directly from the Buddha but from his contemporary disciples. If you want the names, please ask me, I can give you it later. And then we have two other books that are canonical but were added later. So the books that are from the contemporary disciples, let's say, were added first, and then the Katawatu, that I, as I told you, this point of controversies at the Third Buddhist Council. And there is a book that is called the Nilindapanya. You may know the translation, The Question of King Nilinda. That book, you will find that book in the marble slabs in Mandalay. So that means that book was added to the canon by the monks, by the Sangha, in the Fifth Buddhist Council. But that book, actually, we don't know exactly when that book was composed. We may say around the beginning of the Common Era. We don't really know. But that book is so important according to the Theravada tradition that the Sangha decided to include it to the canon in the Fifth Buddhist Council. So there are two in this translation of the Nilindapanya, The Question of King Nilinda, that you can get from the Pali text inside. So this is regarding the canonical literature, so that you have these 40 volumes, and among those 40 volumes you will find this Nilindapanya, the Katawatu, and the books that I told you before, the Patisambhita Magga, the Nidesa, the Chula Nidesa, the Paco Padesa. These are books that also are included in the canonical literature. And then we have the non-canonical Pali literature. And so we have 51 volumes of commentaries. Those commentaries, as I told you, at the First Buddhist Council, according to our tradition, we believe that the great commentary was recorded. And then the king's son, the son of the king, Asoka Mahinda, when he went to Sri Lanka, he brought both the Tipitaka and this great commentary. And it is believed that both the Tipitaka and the commentaries were written in palm leaves. According to the chronicles, the Pali chronicles, when they wrote, they not only wrote the Tipitaka, they wrote also the great commentary. But it is believed that after they wrote, the commentary was lost in the original. And that commentary was translated before it was lost into the language of the island of Sri Lanka. And then, in this 5th century of this era, there was a famous monk by the name Buddhaghosa that we don't know really. They say that we believe that he was born in India and went to Sri Lanka. And that monk, it is said that went to Sri Lanka and found that the old commentary was not anymore in the Pali original, but was in the language of Sri Lanka. And then he converted that commentary again from the language of Sri Lanka to Pali. This is according to our tradition what Buddhaghosa did. So Buddhaghosa is not an author. Please understand this. Buddhaghosa is an editor. And maybe a translator too. So he reverted this commentary into the Pali because he wanted, I mean, this to be known from all over the world. So according to our tradition, he did a great job. So most of these commentaries are attributed to Buddhaghosa. And you can read what I told you before. It is believed that a great commentary originated at the time of the Buddha and was registered in the first Buddhist Council. So this is the commentary that Buddhaghosa really converted into Pali. And those commentaries are very important, are part of the Theravada tradition. The Theravada tradition consists of the Tipitaka, the commentaries, and the sub-commentaries. You cannot remove them. And I'm just quoting what my teacher Venerable Sri Ramana used to say, because there are some people, or there were some people, or maybe there are some people nowadays who say, I mean, that the commentaries are not so good, I mean, that we can do without. But actually, this is not so. No, the commentaries are embedded, are part of the Theravada tradition and cannot be separated from the Pali. Actually, our knowledge of the Pali or the Tipitaka cannot be, we cannot have a correct knowledge of the Tipitaka without the commentaries. But don't take my word, learn Pali so to see by yourself what I'm saying. So, and then we have another part of the non-canonical literature is the sub-commentaries. They're called tikkas. So the commentaries, the date of the commentaries are the 5th century of this era. So the commentaries are very old, actually 2000 years. So when, if you have this Visuddhimagga, that book, you know the Visuddhimagga. The Visuddhimagga is the commentary of the whole Tipitaka. So that book has more than 2000 years. And then we have the sub-commentaries that came after, and we have 26 volumes, and the sub-commentaries also were written in Sri Lanka by these monks, Sariputta, Dhammapada, Ramana. The names are the same as the disciples, but those monks live in maybe 12th century onwards. And the sub-commentaries that also are important, and other works. So in other words, you have chronicles, you have grammatical treatises, you have compendiums, you have dictionaries, you have many kind of books, but all the Pali literature is related to what the Buddha taught. You will not find I don't think anything that is not related to what the Buddha taught or his teaching. There is even a medical treatise in Pali. But it's related, I mean, to the way, I mean, that we understand, I mean, Navidama, the elements and all these teachings. So all the Pali literature is related to what the Buddha taught. So that is important, we understand. So when we study Pali language, so you will not, and then, I mean, you can read all this material, I mean, you will be able to read not only the Vidibhaga but also the commentaries or commentaries on other works. Please believe me, one life is not enough to read all these things. So this last slide is regarding the study of the Pali language. Now, the study of Pali is very important part of the monastic education in Theravada countries, as you can see. Now, in the Vinaya Pitaka, there is an incident that two brothers who were Brahmins, who knew Sanskrit, that the Vedic Sanskrit, were concerned because many people from different, let's say, groups or towns or regions were entering the Sangha. And those people were learning and converting the Buddha's teachings into their own languages. And since these two brothers were Brahmins and they spoke Sanskrit, or Vedic Sanskrit, and they thought that the Sanskrit was a poor, pure and polished language, they approached the Buddha and asked the Buddha permission to convert the Buddha's teachings into Sanskrit. And the Buddha reprimanded them, and I said, no. The Buddha disagreed with that. And the Buddha said, I give you permission to learn the Buddha's work in his own language. This is a famous and controversial passage that you will find in the Vinaya Pitaka regarding these two Brahmins brother, because we have historical evidence that the Buddha didn't use Sanskrit. We were talking with Mr. White on the car about this. We have historical evidence that the Buddha didn't speak the Sanskrit, and we have historical evidence that the Buddha didn't allow these two Brahmins to convert the Buddha's teachings into Sanskrit. So, because we were talking about the people saying, I mean, that Sanskrit is, some people think, may think that Sanskrit is a language of Buddhism. But actually, it is not. Sanskrit came after. You have a Sanskrit Buddhism. But that is after. And according to this passage from the Vinaya Pitaka, the Buddha said, no, I give you permission to learn or to convert the Buddha's work in his own language. Now, there is now a speculation, so what is the language of the Buddha? No? But according to the Buddha Gosa's commentary, the language of the Buddha is the Magadha Bhasa, that is Pali. So according to that injunction that we find in the Vinaya, we need to study the Buddha's word in his own language. And we need to learn the Buddha's word in Pali. So the Buddha is, these are for the monks, this is what the Buddha said. So that's why in the Theravada tradition, you cannot go without learning Pali. So that when you enter the order, as a novice or as a monk, the first thing that they give you is this Pali book, that is the ancient grammar that's called the Kachadam, that is the most ancient Pali grammar. We don't know when that was written, but it's a very old Pali grammar. We have a project with Sukhavati to print that book in English. I don't know when. So you go to Myanmar, and these little monks and these little novices know by heart this book. Why? Because this book is written in the traditional way of aphorisms. You know what aphorisms are? They are short, mnemotechnic sentences where you can learn all the rules of grammar learning those aphorisms. So, I don't remember how many now, but maybe 400 or aphorisms you can learn and you know all the grammar. So this is the oldest Pali grammar that is still studied in Myanmar. Myanmar is the country where I think Pali is studied in the best way, I think. I don't know if Sri Lanka or Sri Lanka, Thailand is here, maybe you will not agree with me, but I think I'm right what I'm saying. I mean, this book, Kachanana, before was studied in Sri Lanka. Actually, it came from Sri Lanka. And all the commentaries of Kachanana come from Sri Lanka. But in Sri Lanka, they don't study that anymore. So it is only in Myanmar that the monks study the Kachanana and all the commentaries and the books that are related to that school. Because there are different schools for learning Pali. So we have this traditional method of learning Pali that is memorizing that is, I think, in the long run, this is the best way to learn. But I didn't learn that way, and I don't think it is a good way to teach Western people. Now, because Western people want to have immediate results, they want to have the benefits, not as soon as possible, no? Only can I agree with me? No? Because when you were giving me some advice about how to approach this party workshop, no? So this is the traditional method of learning. And there are modern ways of learning Pali. So if we continue studying Pali, we will use a modern way. We will not use this traditional way. I mean, the way I mean that I would like to teach Pali is to bring from the beginning material from the Tipitaka so that we can, from the first class of learning Pali, start using the material that is contained in the Tipitaka. And not only that, but also relevant material from the Tipitaka. Things that you are familiar with, or things that are important. So, unfortunately, we can find many examples, and we can pull out passages that are not so difficult, and we can put in class number one of the Pali course and start studying from class number one these passages and start to understand the different grammar rules. And in that way, I mean, we accomplish two things, I think. First, that we keep the interest of the students because you are learning Dhamma when you are learning Pali. And the other thing is that we are introducing the grammar rules from the back. so that you are learning the grammar rule. So in that way, I think we can have a Pali course, no? And you can learn a lot in a Pali course. And I know it maybe it's a little difficult, but if you keep in mind that if you finish this course, you will be able to have direct access to the material of the Tipitaka, I think it's worthwhile the effort to do that. Because I'm glad that Mr. Wade has been coming to the Kaplan base several times to learn Pali, and already he has worked with a sutras that we study here, Utija and Bahija, and also he's been translating word by word passages. So that means that, I mean, you may be slow on your understanding and your translation, but as you are learning Pali grammar, you will be able to understand and translate, and to have a first-hand knowledge of the text. So I think, I mean, that if you have time, I know that you are interested, you should study Pali, I think. And also it is important because if you study Pali, you will be able in the long, in the maybe in the medium term or in the future, be able also to work with translations. And there are not many people who can make translation from Pali into English or Chinese or other languages. So there are some that people who can translate into English, but I don't know into Chinese, I think very few. So that means that we will be able to make available, you know, the Theravada Buddhism, and maybe to people from China. So you have to speak Chinese. So that's why I think it's important that. And it is an adventure, I think, because when you think, I mean, that you are studying something that has more than 2,500 years of antiquity, 2,500 years old, and that you are being able to understand and read and understand what the Buddha taught, I think that is a it's a great experience. So we have a traditional method of learning, and then we have this slide that we have this society that is called the Pali Text Society, that this has done a great work, was founded in 1881, and the first book that was edited in Pali was Dhammapada, and the first translation into European language was to Latin in 1855. So we have come a long way now from 1855 to 2007. Now we have many English translations and in other languages also of the Pali text. So this is the end of this introduction, the first lecture of the introduction to Pali. And tomorrow I will explain about the Pali alphabet, so we will go into the language itself. So tomorrow we will study the Pali alphabet, how to pronounce the sound, and also we can read some passages and learn how to pronounce the Pali. So I think that's it for today. If you want to ask some questions, I think this is the moment for asking questions.
No, I didn't say that the commentaries are part of the Tipitaka. The Tipitaka is the canonical literature, and the commentaries are non-canonical. So no, I don't know if I made a mistake, but I didn't say it. I don't think I said it.
Did you hear me? I
Yes, Abhidhamma is part of the Tipitaka. According to the commentary of the Vinaya, that book that I mentioned to you, the Buddha said that the Dhamma and the Vinaya will be the teachers after his death. Now, the Dhamma, according to the commentary, consists of the suttas and the Abhidhamma. So, according to the commentary of the first book of Abhidhamma, the Abhidhamma was recorded in the first Buddhist Council. Now, I know that there is controversy about this, but I'm giving you the information that is in the oldest books that we have. So some people will argue that Abhidhamma could not have been recorded. Okay, so I will ask those people, please provide me the sources, or if you don't have the sources, give me some convincing evidence that the Abhidhamma was not recorded in the first Buddhist Council, and give me some evidence, I mean, when it was recorded. Because we have the third book of Abhidhamma, the Tikkun of Abhidhamma, the Katavatu, that we know historically that book was added to the Abhidhamma in the third Buddhist Council. So that means that the Abhidhamma, the other six books of Abhidhamma, because there are seven books of Abhidhamma, have to be included before. According to our tradition, and according to this source that I'm telling you, this ancient source, the Abhidhamma was recorded there. So that's... You have some evidence for that not being so? So you're saying that different schools that have different Abhidhamma. But that could be explained because, some groups went different way, and they kept a different tradition. No?
I think different traditions have their own Abhidhamma. Like you said, it's different. It's not that they don't have Abhidhamma. They do.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Different traditions have different Abhidhammas.
Yes.
And have different books, yes. Yes. Yeah. Actually, this is a matter of research, maybe, and study. But I will not rush to conclusions. I stick to the Theravada tradition, and I'm telling you what our sources say. For example, also there is some controversy regarding what I said about when the Buddha told those two Brahmins brothers that they have to learn the Buddha's word in his own language. And some people interpret that what the Buddha was trying to tell them is that you can learn in your own dialect the Buddha's word. And that explanation is also convincing, because you find nowadays that Burmese people learn what the Buddha taught in Burmese. Thai people learn what the Buddha taught in Thai. We are learning what the Buddha taught in English. So, yeah. But the ancient commentary says that now the own language means the Pali. Yes. Any other question?
So how many languages are just 40 volumes of Tipitaka translated into,
Not all the 40 volumes are translated into English. Most of them are translated into English, and I don't know in Chinese, but I know that in Spanish, I mean, very few books have been translated into English. So I guess that English is the language in which most of the 40 volumes have been translated. But there are some books from Abhidhamma that have not been translated into English. And also there are other books from the Kudaka Nikaya not translated into English. But most are. Yes. Yes.
The
Abhidhamma,
part of
the Kham,
which called
some kind of commentary. No, not sub-commentary. That's commentary. That is the one that I told you, the introduction to the commentary. It's not sub-commentary. It comes from Buddha Gosha. Yeah. Yes, but as I told you before, according to our tradition, Buddha Gosha didn't write anything new. He just edited that great commentary that was recorded at the first Buddhist Council. So that's why I mean, so what Buddha Gosha was doing is just converting into Pali and editing what came before. So although there are more than about 1,000 years of difference from the Buddha to Buddha Gosha, the material that he had at his disposal in Sri Lanka, according to our tradition, was the material that was recorded at the first Buddhist Council. So this is what our tradition said. I mean, there are some things in the commentaries that are difficult to believe too. Now, you said that, you remember one of the meaning, the terms that the commentaries use for the Pali, Mula Bhasa. You remember the root language? Okay, I give you the good explanation of Mula Bhasa, the language, the root language of Buddhism. But the commentary also explains that Pali is the root language of everything. Even the commentary says that if you, I'm just remembering, if you leave a child in the forest after he is born without any parenting or teaching, that child will eventually speak Pali. So that is another explanation of it that I omitted today about this Mula Bhasa. So, and that linguistically is not acceptable. So that's no, because we know, I mean, that Pali belongs to this Indo-European language. So, and it's related to the very Sanskrit and eventually comes from that Proto-Indo-European. The commentaries may be wrong in some places, but the fact that the commentaries may be wrong in one place doesn't mean that they are wrong in other places. No? So that's what we need to pick up the things and try to analyze according to the evidence that we have. And I think to try to analyze and study according to the evidence is according to the spirit of the teaching of the Buddha. Because the Buddha said, I mean, that we should not accept anything because it is written in the books. You have studied the Kalama Sutra. So, and also, it's good that you're asking these questions, and also, because studying Pali is like being a detective too. You know? And it is I like very much, for example, I have finished now the Spanish translation of Dhammapada. And when you translate, I mean, and you take some time into doing a translation, and you have to be like a detective and to understand the meaning of the words and relate one meaning with another and try to really get the meaning, even if you have the commentaries. So the study in Pali, I mean, will open new doors, I mean, into your knowledge and understanding of Buddhism and the language. So that's also, no? Instead of repeating what scholars say about, no, that the Abhidhamma, no, came after, or let's try to do our research and study ourselves. Yes.
So Bhante, to be correct, when we talk about Buddha Ghosa, we should remember that he's a compiler or a translator. Right, Bhante?
Yes.
Because the Visuddhimagga is such a famous book in the Theravada tradition that is by Buddha Ghosa. And many people thought that he's the one who wrote it.
He's the author.
That was said compiled by.
Yes.
And many of the people don't know that piece of information.
Yes. So we should be very clear that Buddha Ghosa, he didn't write anything original. And if you see the Visuddhimagga, he's very careful. Sometimes he advances his own opinions, but he says, this is my opinion. No? He never, and he always, I mean, is in the background, saying, I mean, what the commentary, no? And sometimes there is some confusion or contradiction or something like that, and then he says, I mean, some say like this. You will find in the commentaries these views. Some refer to certain group, certain school within the Theravada. And then I mean, certain sometimes my opinion is this. So that is an evidence that he is a compiler. Yes.
And I can see a similar case nowadays with the book Comprehensive Manual of Abhidhamma. The author is Venerable Anuruddha. But our book we always say by Bhikkhu Bodhi.
Have you told Bhikkhu Bodhi?
But instead Bhikkhu Bodhi he just compiled and take more information from comments to just put it in. He supplements Venerable Anuruddha's work. You know, but because of our language usage, we always say, oh, it's the book by Bhikkhu Bodhi.
Yes.
50 years from now, some people don't
remember
Anuruddha.
Yes.
And they say, this book is written about 2000.
Yes. Now, I mean, even in the English translation, I mean, you see, they don't say, I mean, the imaginary guide by the Buddha. No? But you see the translator there, Nyanamoli or,
yes.
Or whoever.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, but there was another just to say, I mean, I remember that the Theravada is a tradition. He used to emphasize very often this, meaning that we have the Tipitaka, the commentaries, and the commentaries, sub-commentaries. And he says that a tradition means that it is something that has been proved over and over again. No? And he used to say to me that before going against the tradition, you need to really do a lot of research and work and in order to say, I feel the commentary was wrong. No? Because this tradition represents the effort of generation and generation of people that have been working on that. So I mean, he used to say, to me, well, maybe, I don't know, 97% is correct, but there are 3% there, I mean, that, no, maybe wrong, but in this 3%, I mean, that is wrong, I mean, we need still, I mean, to be sure, I mean, that that is really wrong. So, yes. Do you have any other questions? Yes.
Yes.
It's a commentary. It belongs to the Atthagata, and the Visuddhimagga is considered a commentary of the whole Tipitaka. That book, the Visuddhimagga, is the commentary of the Vinaya, the Sutta, and the Abhidhamma Pitaka.
Is it canonical or
non-canonical? No. So this is a book that is came after, yeah. And believe it or not, the Visuddhimagga is the explanation of one verse in the Sanhedrin Nikaya. Do you have that book? I don't know, about 800 or 900 pages, no? And Vidagosa wrote, not wrote, but anyway, that book is based on the explanation of one gatha, one verse that the Buddha replied to a deity, a deva. The deva asked one question in the Sanhita Nikaya, and the Buddha replied to that in verse. And so Buddha Gosa wrote that Visuddhimagga as an explanation of that verse. Okay. Do you have any other questions? Okay, I don't record anything. It's off the record.
Samuel,
yes.
How is the Pali alphabet different from the traditional Burmese alphabet?
Actually, Pali doesn't have a own alphabet. Tomorrow we will study this. Because Pali originated orally. So then when the teachings were written, each country wrote it in their own alphabet. That's why you have now Pali in many different alphabets. You can write Pali in the, let's see, I will show you. You can write Pali in Sinhalese. For example, let's say the Digha Nikaya. This is, let's say, let's go to the Mahabharata Sutta. Let's go to that passage that I told you. What number was 161? Okay, this is the Digha Nikaya. Let me find. I will show you this passage that the Buddha says the Raman the Vinaya in Pali. So here, 216, you see, this is Pali in Roman script. So, fortunately nowadays, if you want to learn Pali, you need to learn foreign alphabets. You can learn Pali in Roman script with some diacritical marks that we tomorrow will learn. So 216 is the thing that I translated. You see here, Yo Wo Ananda Maya Dham Ucha Vinaya Ucha Vesito Panyato. This is when the Buddha says Ananda. Yo means that. That Dhamma. Cha means and. So that means that Dhamma and Vinaya. Wo means to you. The Sito, which, hot. Panyato, explain, may know. So that this line means that Ananda is evocative. The Buddha is speaking Ananda. So Ananda, that Dhamma. Maya means by me, the Buddha says, Ananda, by me. So it is indirect language. In English, no, it's not used much, but in Pali, we use this by me, instead of I preach. No? So that Ananda, that Dhamma, and Vinaya, by me, to you, talk and explain. You have this, the learning Pali. And then, so means that you are. That. So it refers to the Dhamma and Vinaya. So that, Satam means teacher. That is the teacher. What? Same meaning here. To you, Mama, my Acharyana, my death. So Mama Acharyana means after my death. So that Dhamma, so means that Dhamma Vinaya. Sata is the teacher. In Pali we don't use the is. It's implied. Here you don't need. So that the teacher to you, of you, after my death. So this is the passage that.
And then do you have that in Chinese?
No, but I can show you. No, because why in Chinese?
That paragraph 260.
This is Pali Burmese script. So you can read. Who can read Burmese? So
no, I
here. So what? So you can read the Burmese here. So what? Mama Chajina Sata. No. So this means this that to you after my death, the teacher. So here you have the beginning. Yo. So you have verbs. So, and then you have a single is. I don't know single is. So, the problems. That's weird. What do you say in Chinese to have it?
I want to see if they can read it.
No.
It's like
Pali
using Chinese
too. This 216? This is right. You can see Singhalese. I don't know Singhalese. So I cannot tell you what it is. And then you have in Devanagari, that is the Sanskrit. This is the Indian. It's used for Sanskrit. I think I can find that. That one. So Mama Chajan. Sata. Somebody can read Sanskrit? In there I got it? Okay. And then Thai. Ah, I don't know what happened. It's a problem. I want to show you this. The 16. This is time. No.
Yes.
I don't know why you can't do it wrong. Anyway. But you saw already. Yeah. So, my way to this in Pali is just like that. So we can think this passage, for example, no? We start in class number one. So in class number one, we start studying, I don't know, the different cases. So where I will pick up a passage that is very important like this, and then we can use that for studying that part of the Yama. So in that way, I mean, we are picking up important things from the suttas, and then we are learning the Yama. Well, unfortunately, we can find many, many, many things, you know? Because now with the CD, you can search and find, okay, I want this thing, you know? So, and then, we study one subject, let's say one class, and then exercises. And all the exercises we can take from the Tipitaka and the literature, Pali literature. So that means that we will not be creating artificial language for you to learn, but we will be based on the material that is in the Tipitaka. So this is the way I already taught in Spanish like that. So, okay. Algo más? Something more?
Thank
What kind of alphabets are on those marbles?
This is wrong. The one that I showed you. But it is, you know, like the fonts over the history, I mean, they change. So if you go on, the way, I mean, that the Burmese is written is different, little different from what you can read, but just can still read. And there is a CD that contains all the Tipitaka in the marble slabs. And I have a copy of that CD. I think I can, somebody wants it, I can share with you. I think it's not copyright. So they took pictures of all the marble slabs. And we have this CD with all the Tipitaka. So, and believe it or not, you have been to Mandalay, no?
Yes.
To that place?
Not to those places.
No? Yeah. And so there is this Kutubo pagoda where the 729 Mabushla are. And on the side of that pagoda, there is another compound that has all the commentaries and the sub-commentaries in marble slabs. But these are 1,000, I don't know, 800, something like that. There was a person, I think at the beginning of the 20th century, who did that project.
A lay people?
Yeah, it was like a hermit. So you can go there, but there are so many marble slabs that you cannot keep one brick stupa because it will be, I don't know, the space. So they keep it like a pavilions, like a warehouse, like a Costco, something like that. And you can see this. No? And so you have all the commentaries and the sub-commentaries in marble slab. Because Mandalay is a place where there are you can get marble nearby. So that's why it's cheap. Okay.
So you said that the first few are Buddha's council, the Buddha's teaching were recorded in Brahmana books, right? So
memory.
Remember, right?
Yeah.
And which, you know, returning to like 450 volumes in the end, right? So doesn't mean every monk could comprehend all.
No.
So how does
actually
it work?
What is the they have what is called the reciters. So that means that a group of monks will like a school, we will remember the Digha Nikaya. So that those monks are called Digha Vanaka, the reciters of the Digha. And then there is another group of monks or school. When I say a group, it can be thousands or more. They are called Majjhima Vanaka, that are the middle length discourses recited. So that school, that group will remember that part. So they divide it. So since you have this Vanaka, so the different groups keep different parts together. So and then when they come to the council, I mean, but there were monks, I think, all through history, or almost all through history, that could remember all. But we don't know, I mean, now we know, because in Burma, for example, there are more than 5 monks who know by heart all. We think, I mean, that throughout the, you know, the Theravada history, there must have been those monks. No, but we don't know the names. But we know about these traditions called schools. Mm. No?
So for the most part in the past 1,000 years, I mean, it's like, in most cases, a monk or a few monks can only address a certain part of Buddhist teaching, but not a whole thing.
Yes.
Right. So yes. We have to go to different places to learn.
Yes. You need to go to a different group, or different monks. Because one monk, unless I mean those extraordinary monks who can remember all, but there are nowadays,
So I don't think one manga, no?
Amazing.
You know, it's a lot of material.
Yeah,
no. Yes. So, yeah.
The most current issue of National Geography,
yes.
There's an article about memory. And in there, there's a case with a lady who's still living now. She remembers every single moment of her past. Oh. Like 10 years ago, on that day, at
really?
That time, what happened? And so, if you read the most current, so I think of Venerable Ananda. You know? And so, if you read, it's so amazing that the scientists are studying her memory.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also, you have to bear in mind that at that time, that was the method of learning. No? Now, I mean, we don't have this method, so we don't practice that memory. That's why, I mean, we need to rely on books. But at that time, the people were trained in that way. So, I mean, so that, although, I mean, it's incredible, I mean, we have to understand that it's not impossible. I mean, that it's possible, I mean. But I think myself, that's my opinion, no, that some things are the Buddha taught and were not recorded. Because why? I mean, what does the evidence say? For example, in the Milinda Panya, in that book that question of Milinda, that was added in the Fifth Buddhist Canon, there are some passages that say that Buddha said this that cannot be traced to the rest of the Tipitaka. So that gives you the clue that I mean, and that is possible because the Buddha taught so many things. I mean, I think it's impossible. I mean, no. Although Ananda had that great memory that he can record everything that the Buddha, no? So many things may be out. And that books, no? When they're quoting and saying, and the Buddha said this, and we cannot find in the other books. So what conclusion can we? No? And also in the, tomorrow we'll see, in the Asoka scripts, in the Asoka inscriptions. Sometimes he quotes from the Tipitaka, and some things we can find in the Tipitaka, but sometimes some things we cannot. We cannot say in this book. No? Yeah, it is like being a detective, no? To study Bali and all these things. And the more you learn, the more things will be clear. Yeah. Yeah. That's why it's so important the books, you know, the scripture. Without the books we don't have the teachings for the meditation, for instance. So that's why I mean the Sangha has such important role historically. Because the thing that we are studying and the thing that we can study still, I mean, it's because the Sangha has that great job of keeping the Dhamma and the Vinaya. So we take it for granted, but we need to sometimes, you know, reflect about that. Sometimes we lose this reflection, I mean, that, oh, the life is short, you know, like the meditation on death, you know? Life is short, that we are very fortunate to have been able to have to meet the Buddha's teaching and all this thing. But also, I mean, we need to reflect, I think, about that we have the Buddha's teachings because all these previous generations were so hard, no? And faceless monks, like this demonstration that we see, no? Now in Myanmar, no? Faceless monks, I mean, that all together, no? We're able to keep the teachings. So that's why I said it's unprecedented historical event, I think this is what the monks did. Because I don't know, the Bible also maybe something like that, but I think it's different.
Maybe it's shorter for some books.
Yeah, I think it's different.
Yeah. So for lots of us, that work, and usually life is short, right? So you have to do just a couple of books. Do you have any suggestion as to what which book to start?
Say again.
I said that we don't have much time to, your work and, and you said that is very short and so we don't have time to read all 40 volumes of stuff.
Yes.
So is there any books that you think could most inviting in a few or two?
The Dhammapada. Yes. So that's verses. Did you have any English translation?
Is there an English translation?
Yeah, there are English translation. And also you can get the Dhammapada Pali in English.
What's the name again?
Dhammapada. Can you write down?
Bhangshu Jin.
Yeah. So actually that book is a good also for learning Pali. No? So maybe we can use that book and for learning Pali because you have the important teachings.
Okay.
No?
I'm still beginner, so
okay. But you know, if you follow, for example, I think I can teach you into Pali course part one in maybe, let's say, 16 classes. And I warranty, this is that if you study that material, and do the exercises. After those 16 classes, you will have a working knowledge of Pali. I can assure you. Now you will learn many things in these classes. But the good thing is that you can go back to these classes many times. No? So let's say you can have one class every 2 weeks. No, so I don't know, every 2 weeks, 4 months. We can finish this part one of Pali course. No? So think about it. Yeah. Anyway, I will prepare that material even if I don't have students. Somebody will come sometime.
Any more questions?
You know, I will tell you one story to finish this. There was a monk when I was here after my ordination from Myanmar. He's from a village in Upper Burma. And he was going to go back to Myanmar, and then one doctor came and he said, "I want to offer you snake bite kit." No, because there are cobras there and all these deadly snakes there in that place. So the doctors thought, he will buy these things, so in case of emergency, they can have the monastery so they can treat. And the man said, "No, I don't want to take this. Because if I bring this, there will be a case of a snake bite at the village. Never had been one." So, anyway, I don't know if I would do that myself, like him, but I want to take this example for Pali. If I prepare the material, no, someone will come one day and say, "Okay, I want to learn this." Okay, so I see you tomorrow. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you.